So good afternoon. Thank you all so much for being here. My name is Pamela Lilliston, and I'm a PhD student at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. I have no relationships to disclose. So as the other panelists have highlighted, exotic dance is a ubiquitous and legal form of sex work in the United States. The industry comprises approximately 3,000 exotic dance clubs, which earn an estimated $15 billion per year. In some contexts, once women are immersed in the exotic dance industry, they're presented with opportunities to engage in sexual services, which range from dancing with no physical contact to vaginal and anal intercourse. And although women often enter the profession with more rigid sexual boundaries, over time they may compromise them for greater financial gain. While the act of dancing itself does not place women at risk for contracting STIs, including HIV, this more direct sexual contact that may occur in the context of dancers' interactions with clients does. It may also put dancers at increased risk for a number of additional physical and mental harms, including alcohol and drug use, depression, and physical abuse. So the hub for exotic dancing in Baltimore is called The Block. It's a historical red light district, which is located downtown. In the past 60 years, The Block has transitioned from a several block long strip known for its burlesque houses to a 1.5 block segment consisting of approximately 20 exotic dance clubs, bars, and adult entertainment establishments. So it's really dense. Accompanying this transition, The Block has become increasingly known for drug-related activity and sex work, despite the illegal status of both in Baltimore City. A quantitative study of 98 dancers on The Block conducted in 2008 to 2009 found that 42% of dancers had sold sex in the clubs, and almost 70% of them had done so for the first time on The Block. So given the potentially important role of employment in the exotic dance industry on STI risk, we were interested to know why women on The Block start dancing and how these reasons might translate into subsequent sexual risk behavior. So the aims of our study were to explore the factors that facilitate women's entry into the exotic dance profession and to understand how these same forces shape dancers' subsequent STI risk trajectory. So to achieve these aims, in June through August of 2009, we conducted a qualitative study with dancers on The Block. We interviewed 25 dancers all over the age of 18. Interviews were conducted in cars, private areas in the strip clubs, and the Baltimore City Health Department's Needle Exchange Program van by three trained interviewers. Potential participants were recruited in two ways. So they were approached individually in the club or on the street outside of the clubs, or they were referred to the study by the Needle Exchange Program. Interviews were semi-structured and facilitated through the use of an interview guide. They were tape-recorded and transcribed verbatim. An analysis was conducted using an inductive approach in which themes were allowed to emerge from the data itself. Data were analyzed for recurring themes, concepts, and terms, and coded using Atlas TI. So the age range for the dancers in our study was 19 to 42 years, with a median of 24 years. 44% were white and 44% were African American. The length of the time worked on The Block ranged from 2 months to 25 years, and the average was 4.6 years. The median number of clubs ever worked in on The Block was 5. Participants described a combination of predisposing and enabling factors which led them to exotic dancing. Economic necessity, the promise of a better life, drug use, physical abuse, and enjoyment of dancing drove women towards the industry, while social networks and clubs' hiring practices facilitated their entry. The vast majority of participants initiated exotic dancing during a period of financial vulnerability. For many dancers, economic deprivation, combined with a perception of limited opportunities, created a pathway towards a profession that they had not previously considered an option. Several participants turned to dancing after losing a job, and others were employed elsewhere, but found that the low wages were insufficient to pay for basic necessities. As one participant told us, "I have no money, I have no job, so I started working down here." Participants who had children often perceived exotic dancing as their only option for supporting their family. Some reported reluctantly giving up less lucrative career paths in order to better provide for their children. When asked why she began stripping, one dancer recalled, "I actually had been going to school for nursing. This was not even my objective in life. But now I'm drug into it. So I had to quit school. I ended up having 4 kids. So I had to quit and provide for my family." Regardless of their financial situation upon entry, all participants were drawn to exotic dancing by the promise of greater wealth and a better quality of life. Many dancers perceived exotic dancing as an opportunity to alleviate economic distress. As one dancer told us, "My cousin came out of the club with money and paid her rent and gas and electric, and then she let me borrow a couple of dollars, which was like 200, which was like nothing to her. And I was like, okay, wow, I can do this." Other dancers believed that working at the strip club would increase their socioeconomic status, allowing them to acquire the luxury items that they desired. Another dancer told us about a club manager she had met during her first time on the block. She used to be a dancer, and she worked her way up. She had, like, a boob job, and, like, she has her own house, and she supports her kids, and, you know, she has, you know, her own cell phone, and she shops all the time and all that stuff. For some of the women interviewed, drug use played a pivotal role in the initiation of dancing. A few women described resorting to dancing as a desperate solution for funding their drug addictions. Beyond creating the financial motivation to dance, drug use could also limit the alternative opportunities available to women. Some dancers found that more traditional occupations were incompatible with their drug use. As one participant described, "My drug habit had got a lot worse, and I had really no other option. I eventually came down to here, and it was pretty much because I was forced into it, because I had no money, and this was the only job that I could work. Actually, you know, I can't work at a normal job or wake up in the morning. I used to be, like, completely against stripping, but when you start using drugs, it's like everything that you were against is completely out of, you know, the way now." Although much less common among our participants and often concurrent with economic need, abusive situations also pushed women towards exotic dancing. Participants described entry into exotic dancing as both a form of abuse and escape from it. One dancer described being forced into stripping for the first time by a physically abusive partner. "I actually was forced into it. My husband beat me, so his means of income was for me to make money, and he knew that I could make money dancing, so he brung me down here to the block." Lastly, a few dancers reported initiating work at exotic dance clubs because they wanted to be performers or just enjoyed dancing. As one participant described, "Yeah, but I chose to dance because all my life, since I was little, like I had talent with dancing, all my life." Initiation of exotic dancing was most often facilitated by social networks. The vast majority of women interviewed reported being first introduced to the profession by a close female friend or family member who danced herself and presented the job as a viable solution to financial hardship. This introduction to dancing through social networks often served the additional purpose of normalizing the profession, giving women the confidence that they too could dance. After breaking up with her boyfriend, one dancer recalled, "I was like, shit, how am I going to pay my bills now? And my cousin, she dances, and she came and told me, you should come down to the club with me because you can make some money real quick. And it was like right before the first when I had to pay rent. So I was like, okay." The payment structure and hiring practices in strip clubs accommodated the needs of women whose lifestyles and circumstances required fast money and flexibility. The common practice of immediate hire allowed women to obtain a job the same day that they walked into the club, and many dancers noted that the club's payment system, which paid dancers after each shift, was the primary attraction of working at the strip club. When asked why she started dancing, one dancer told us, "I guess just quick money. Basically, that's it, just the money. I just needed a job quickly and something where I could get paid daily." So many of the same factors, including economic necessity, drug use, and social networks, which predisposed women to exotic dancing and facilitated their entry into the profession, also made them more vulnerable to engaging in HIV risk behavior once immersed in the club environment. Financial incentives were the primary reason that women often reluctantly crossed their own sexual boundaries inside the club. Dancers quickly learned that on the block, their earnings were directly proportional to the level of sexual activity that they engaged in. And dancers who perceived themselves as being economically deprived or in a state of financial crisis often described the feeling of having no choice but to participate in high-risk sexual behavior, which included both selling sex and also having unprotected sex. As one dancer told us, "'Cause some guys offer you a lot of money, and it's like shit, and when you need that money, like being down here, where I'm in a predicament where guys offer me a lot of money to do something, and shit, when you need that money, and it's like that much money, like that, it's like, all right." Dependence on drugs could further heighten dancers' vulnerability to STI transmission within the strip clubs. Funding a drug habit served as motivation for risky sexual behavior. When asked whether she had ever exchanged sex without using a condom, one dancer told us, "It was just all about the money because I needed money to get high and I needed more drugs. And, you know, I've done it a couple times with a few people." Last, just as peers normalized exotic dancing during the process of initiation, they often pushed women towards risky sexual behavior once immersed in the club. In a context where selling sex was the norm, dancers found that refusing to do so could mean losing clients and income to other dancers. One dancer described why she sells sex in the club. "Most of the girls would be doing that, so it's like if you're not doing that, you're not making any money, because if you don't do it, another girl's going to do it." So in conclusion, our research found that on the block, many of the same factors which predisposed women to exotic dancing and facilitated their entry into the profession also made them more vulnerable to engaging in sexual risk behavior once immersed in the club environment. Being in a state of social and economic instability pushed women towards exotic dancing, and those who entered the profession in a state of heightened vulnerability often felt that they had little choice regarding the type of sexual services that they provided to clients. While this research provides a concerning picture of STI risk in this exotic dance club environment, we think it also points to some opportunities for intervention which could improve the health of exotic dancers. So, for example, at the structural level, interventions addressing women's economic vulnerability and norms surrounding intimate partner violence could help to ensure that all women who enter the exotic dance industry do so because they choose it. Once in the club environment, club policies could help to ensure availability and use of condoms. Harnessing the power of social networks within the clubs could help to promote healthier sexual behavior like consistent condom use. And last, entry into drug treatment for women who desire it could help to interrupt a cycle of drug addiction and sexual risk behavior. So thank you so much, and I'd be happy to take any questions when the panel's finished.